This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This holiday season, you know what I have on my wish list? Adventure. That's why I got a new Honda during the Happy Honda Days sales event. They have a whole lineup of rugged all-wheel drive SUVs, CR-V, Pilot, Passport. But at the end of the day, I drove off in a new HR-V with a bunch of safety features. And best of all, I got it on clearance. So don't just sit around knitting an ugly holiday sweater. See your local Honda dealer for Happy Honda Days clearance pricing today.
Well, they walked into Madrid with hope in their hearts, and they'll walk away with the greatest prize in club football. Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool's King to the Cot are champions of Europe once again.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Cop and Fracas. I'm your host Fahi, and today I've got with me the General Ellis.
What's going on?
The waste man from Walsall, Chris. Hey,
even on the second attempt, you've managed to sneak that one in. So fair play.
I'm gonna bring it in all the time. and we got the Cop and Jester, Harold.
Jeez, what are you saying, my guy?
My guy, energy's here. Cool. All right. So before we get started, shout out to everyone following us on Twitter. Cop and Fracas. If you haven't done so already, please do that and join in with the convo today with the hashtag Touchline Fracas. So let's get started. Let's discuss Saturday game with Southampton 2-1, 3 points in the bag. What were you guys saying? Ellis, you go first.
Obviously, coming off the back of Wednesday's game, or last week Wednesday against Chelsea, it was always going to look a difficult one. A lot of fatigue was. I didn't watch the match live, but when I watched it on Sky After, it looked like the team was a little bit fatigued in the first half, which was going to happen anyway. Coming back from Turkey, playing into late into their time. I think the game finished about 12-1 their time or something.
Yeah,
1 o'clock. So that's always gonna kill the guys. First half. From what I saw in the highlights, we looked really disjointed. Passes were going astray. A lot of mishaps. A lot of players not winning the first ball. Really slow spot. But again, that was going to happen because they were just blatantly tired. Second half, they kind of bucked up their ideas, kept control of the ball well, started to make a few chances. Obviously, first half, shout out to Mane for a stupendous goal.
Another 10 out of 10. Clutch.
Stupendous confectionery, mate. which we needed that really. So it allowed us to go into half time, it changed the half time teams up a little bit. Just controlled the game a little bit more. Got the second goal, controlling, then obviously Adrian made a howler, which was a bit terrible. But we moved, man. 3 points. Can't really complain, man. I just needed those 3 points and keep it moving.
So, Harold, what are you saying in terms of what Ellis is saying? Do you agree with his points, or are you like worried from what you saw on Saturday?
I think there's parts of it that does worry me. I mean, we'll get into it later about the higher line that we're looking to like embed into our defense.
Yeah,
does worry me a little bit, but we'll get into that later. As far as the game itself, yeah, it was, my thoughts are reminiscent of, and they echo Ellis. We had a long game in Istanbul, which really probably should have ended much sooner. I don't actually agree with the extra time itself, by the way. It should just go straight to penalties.
There's anyway. No need for it.
Yeah, exactly. It's happened. I have to deal with it now. And yeah, going from there to the South Coast in Southampton, we just wanted to get 3 points. I honestly couldn't care how we did it. We needed the 3 points. And it was the kind of game where we needed one of our star players to step up. Mane, once again, got a goal and an assist. In fact, last season, he only got one assist, so he's really equaled last season's tally.
Wait, the whole season?
Yeah, in the Prem, he got 22 goals, one assist.
Are we serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, good last year's tally. But yeah, he was outstanding. He's so hard to predict on what he's going to do. He is, and I know there's a lot of talk at the moment, and we'll get into it later, of course, about Salah versus Mane, but he's just that little bundle of energy, and you just never know if he's just going to pop it top bins or he's going to hit the top of the cop. Like it's honestly
unpredictable.
Yeah, he's unpredictable, exactly. But yeah, in the whole grand scheme of things, the Adrian mistake was a bit annoying, but it seems to be a theme with our goalkeepers to make at least one error lead into a goal. I don't know why. But yeah, man, you get the 3 points, come back home, a week rest, and yeah, we think about those issues later.
So, Krish, what are you saying in terms of the actual performance? Do you feel like it was just important to get the 3 points? Or do you think there is a bit of cause for concern? Because quite a few of our fans are a bit worried in terms of what they've been seeing the past couple of weeks.
Well, it wouldn't be Liverpool Football Club if the fans weren't worried about something or other, would it?
That's true.
I just think it's one of those games where you could tell even the big dog himself, Van Dijk, looked a little bit not physically exhausted, but mentally exhausted. I think you can tell from the Yoshida chance where he should basically score. Van Dijk loses him, and you know if it's Matip in that situation, we're probably having a bit of an argument on Twitter about Matip should have done better there, blah blah blah. But because it's Virgil, we give him a little bit of leeway because he's more than earned it. Actually, it's one of those games where it's identical to the Leicester game last season, even down to the goalkeeping mistake. I don't think we really ever looked in doubt of losing it, even though they had, 55 minutes of training from when they landed back and then had to go straight back to Southampton, which is pretty...
Yeah.
Which is pretty amazing, really, when you think about it. We controlled the game, had a fair bit of possession, and it was one of the I think with the midfield and stuff, it was a bit of a mixed bag midfield. Ox played really well, but I'm pretty sure in his pre-game just went, look, I just need you to just get through this 90 minutes. You got a week of rest to prepare for Arsenal, and he's just gone to the front three. Look, I'm going to need you guys to produce a little bit of magic and just do what you normally do to see us over the line, and I'm pretty sure we did that.
Yeah, so like the way I see it is like the most important thing was to get the 3 points because in my head, the whole time before the Super Cup game, I was thinking, boy, if it's going to have to be one or the other, I couldn't see us winning both games because I was thinking Southampton, 1 week to like prepare for it. Yeah. They already had a bad result against Burnley. They're going to be at it at home. But yeah, somehow we survived with quality. That's kind of what dragged us through that game. Just quality moments, Firmino and Mane, they did what we needed them to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, thankfully, that was good.
Just to follow on from what Chris said, actually, on topic of Van Dijk, there was one part that did worry me a little bit. I guess that could have just been tiredness, both physically and mentally. But it was right at the end when Ings had a chance to score. Like, he really should have buried that chance to make it 2-2. Van Dijk just switches off and doesn't cover the near post.
Yeah.
And it did worry me a tiny bit because, I mean, obviously he's Virgil. Not, and I mean, we're not going to ever put him under the lights. But I don't know, there's a couple of moments I think he rests a bit on his laurels, which he should because he is like gargantuan in himself and his physical appearance. But it is a bit like, you know what, should you be so, like, should you take the risk? It's a little bit nonchalant sometimes where he plays, which yeah. I like. But at the same time, it's like, it does worry me a little bit. But luckily, we haven't had to pay for it. So I guess, as you said, I'm just being a Liverpool fan and just worrying about things that hasn't actually happened.
Okay, so I'm actually glad you mentioned that moment because it got mentioned yesterday, well, on Monday Night Football, and they were trying to work out, was he being lazy and not actually tracking Ings, or was he tired or whatever? Or was it this line that they're trying to play where they're trying to push up, even with like little bits of space behind them where they were just trying to keep the line and catch Ings offside? So yeah, I know. It was mental. Like, that is what they were discussing. And I was thinking, why the hell would you play offside 3 yards away from goal? Discussing the defensive side of it, what are your thoughts on this line that we're playing, this stupidly high line that we're playing? Like, what is going on? Ellis, you go first.
I think about the high line. It's a bit mad because, like, I was even having an argument with my dad. Me and my dad were going back and forth. We're like, oh, nah, we played the high line last season. It's the same thing you're saying now. It's ridiculously high. So I read an article this morning and it was saying the reason why we played a high line was like we're trying to push up the press.
Okay.
So like we're pressing a bit more. So we press naturally anyway, but when you push up the high line, then you can press and make it like a half pitch. So playing at a half pitch, then it allowing the forwards to get wider, trying to bring more players into play. Obviously, we're not too sure on the specific. Are we doing something just in the meantime until we get up to full fitness, then we revert back to the way we were playing? I don't know. There's a million and one questions. I don't know what it could be. For me, in my head, I'm just thinking that we're trying to just control the press a bit harder, try to keep the ball in the opponent's half and try to just catch them in a counter press. But I don't know. You never know what it could be.
So, I read an article the other day, and I actually had a conversation with Touchline General Lewis, like, during the Super Cup about this, because I was watching the Super Cup game and I was like, this high line is ridiculous, there's got to be something more to it. And I came up with the notion that it was a case of, because VAR is now in play, they're our thought process is we're trying to be protected by like technology. And you know, if we work on a high line and we make sure our line is like consistent in a sense, we're more likely to get offsides go in our favour. And even if an attacker gets through on goal and is onside, what is the likelihood they actually score against our keeper? Yeah. And I feel like the way our statisticians work, that is something they were looking at. And then a journalist called Simon Hughes, he mentioned that in an article, I think a day after the Super Cup. So do you think it could be due to VAR as well? Harold, what are you thinking about it? Or do you just think it's just a new type of tactic, just like Ellis is saying?
No, I think especially in a modern game, there is a lot of intricacies, if I can even say the word, involved in how we prepare and how we play. I think it is a very risky way of playing, but it's definitely doable. I just think it's like, because obviously, I think I adhered to this in the last pod. It's a change from the norm of what we're used to and just defend now and like just don't worry about that kind of thing. Like, just you do the defending you need to do and then if you happen to be offside, then whatever. But relying on offside is, to me, is kind of crazy, but I'm trying to get used to it, which is hard. I saw already yesterday, I was watching Monday Night Football as well, when Liverpool have caught most people offside. We've caught people offside 9 times in 2 games, which is incredible. Like, it's mad. And I noticed last year, it's not too dissimilar from the free kick deliveries. We were very quick to catch people offside rather than actually having to defend.
Yeah.
And it caught us out in the Leicester game. And to be fair, it did have more successes than it had failures. But for me, it is the positioning of our defenders that's killing me. It's the, like, you're, no matter how, I know Van Dijk is great, don't get me wrong, but when a player is running the opposite way to which you're facing, it's very hard to recover. And obviously the ball travels quicker than anything else. So it's just the position of them. If they're playing offside, but their bodies are turned towards as if they're ready to run, I wouldn't mind. But very much like it's either offside and they go on and score, or it's like, it's either they're offside and okay, we've got away with it, or they're just onside and they've managed to go on and score. I'd just rather it be a bit more precautionary. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, I get you. And I guess it's easier to watch then as well, because like we're kind of just worried watching this line over and over again and people exposing it.
Oh. I'm just hoping every time, like, I'm going to hear the whistle. Like, honestly, I just watch the players and their body language. I'm just like, is it offside? Is it like, what's against Norwich? It kept happening. I was like, what is going on? I guess it's something new. And it is, like, in football, it is the fine margins that, like, you see, that, especially in the modern game, that's going to effectively win you the league. So maybe that's something they are implementing. I do think it is a very sensible conclusion to come to in terms of the VAR. But relying on it, oh, boy.
I have the weirdest feeling it's to do with VAR. Like, it just makes the most sense to me, because I don't understand how you could possibly go from what we were doing last season, where we were so sensible in the way we were defending other than on set pieces, to what we're doing right now. There has to be more to it. There's no reason why you just randomly decide to throw away what we were doing last season, because we had the best, like, defensive record. So why would you change it?
Honestly, I think that is a good hypothesis to come to. I can't tell you another reason why he's doing it, but it's just the resting on it. It's just putting, or it's like, it's almost like every attack we're putting it all on the line. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, basically.
It's almost like we really are relying on that and just relying on technology. And to be fair, technology will be right, but there are times where people can, if you have that little bit of lapse in concentration, then they potentially scored, as opposed to, or even if you've done that, you had a little bit of a last concentration, Gomez can cover, Van Dijk can cover, Matip can cover. This, like, all of that is out of the equation. So it seems like all or nothing kind of thing.
Yeah, 100%. Krish, what are you saying? Are you pro high line or against it?
I think when we've got a bit more of a bigger sample size of games to analyse, I can kind of make a bit more of a decision on it. But it is the thing where you think, obviously, last season defence, like you said, it was so good. If it's not broke, you know, if it's not broke, why fix it, kind of thing, and just keep running it back. But I think a lot of it comes from the midfield as well. I think if the midfield presses a bit more, it reduces space for them to attack and kind of get those through balls through. And, you know, that was one of the things we did really well last season, like Harold said, that we caught so many people offside, not only, you know, in play, but on set pieces as well. But it'd be interesting to see, actually, in terms of average position of our centre-backs as well versus last season, how high they've actually pushed up. Because I don't know if it's a thing to kind of sit by Fabinho and help him kind of disrupt play as well. That could be quite interesting, because I don't know if you've noticed as well, with Mane and Salah, they're hugging the touchline a lot more and they're not playing as centrally as they normally are. So I think it's a little bit of a tactical tweak from Klopp and Linders just to kind of get us a bit more possession so we can attack with a bit more authority.
Yeah. Do you guys feel like, in general, we're going to continue with this throughout the season? Or do you think it's just a case of they're experimenting to see, like, how many decisions actually go our way compared to what they're expecting?
So you might look at it as a plan B.
So okay.
That as the season goes on and fitness improves, team settles down, I think we'll revert back to normal. But I think you'll see when we're probably, like, let's say, chasing a game or we're trying to get into a game, I think you'll just look to push up. I know it sounds a bit suicidal, but you probably like to push up and then get Salah Mane out wide and try attack that way. That's just me thinking. Look, I can't see us doing this all season, man. It's too much. It's criminal, man.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think it will be really telling to see what we do against Arsenal. I think that will be a good way in judging how it's going to be the rest of our season. Because if we play a high line against Pepe, Lacazette, Aubameyang.
Boy,
highlight against them for a year. And I guess if it works, Klopp is going to be like, you know what? This is working. Let's stick to it. That's my thinking. However, I would like to think he's going to play a little bit different against Arsenal. I do think he's almost going for like a strangle the opponent with such little space where they actually have to play an overhead ball. Strangle them, get the goals, and then we can rest on our laurels and defend. And obviously, last season, conceded the least goals. He knows we can defend. Even if they get past our defence, we have a good goalkeeper in goal. It's going to be hard to beat. Going to be hard to score. So I think that's part of his plan. Like, just get the game won early and then chill. That's my thinking is, hence the high press. What worries me is I love Fabinho, but it's the reliance on him. He is a single-man pivot. And him having to do so many different jobs. He's almost like Xabi Alonso and Mascherano in one, which is so hard to be. So I just really fear if he's not in the system, it just doesn't work at all. Because once our creative fullbacks push up, he drops into a three. And if he's not there, or if he, like, for whatever reason, he like we saw against Southampton, he's not playing, we're just overly exposed, and the defensive strictness of a certain player is just not there. So the reliance on him in that system as well is so key. I just feel like it's so dependent on each player that the system may not be like foolproof. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I also think like it is fine to try that out, but you should still be doing it when you've got Alisson in goal. Yeah. Because yeah. I personally would feel more confident with Alisson at a one-on-one than Adrian.
I agree. Yeah,
definitely, 100%.
So, so it'll be interesting to see what happens for the next few weeks.
I think going back to the point Harold raised about Fabinho, I think in the midfield, then you want one of your midfielders to not really stand next to Fabinho, but just so be aware of where he is. So then if you're playing with three in the middle, you have your number eight, your number six, and the other attacking midfielder. So you want one who's going to go in and support the attack. And you want one who is half and half. So he's going to marginally support the attack. But then if a counter attack is under threat, then he can quickly run back and help Fabinho.
Yeah.
So you want one of that. So I think that's the way the midfield is usually set up. Like you said, it'll be interesting to see the next couple of weeks what we do. And but again, Fahy, you're right. You rather want Alisson in goal if you're going to play that high line, because you kind of trust him a bit more and a bit more secure than Adrian.
Boy, luckily we've got Mane and Salah to kind of get us the goals, and we can just hope we pam at the other end.
That's it, man.
So talking about our two favourite forwards, Mane and Salah. The last week I have been on Twitter and I have seen so many arguments, so many debates about these two. Number one, I don't understand why our fans are even debating about this.
Mate.
Why not appreciate both? Yeah, that's number one. So, like, I don't understand why you guys are actually debating this over and over again. Appreciate both, if we still got them. But the conclusion that a lot of people are now coming to is Mane is more important to the team than Salah is. How do you guys feel about that? Chris, you can go first. What are your thoughts on this debate?
We all know, out of the three, the most important of them is Firmino to the team. No.
I mean, you said that with so much confidence, no one agreed.
Well, no, it is true. Like when he doesn't play up front, everything just seems so disjointed. Nothing runs through. You just look at the Super Cup final for example.
Yeah.
But going back to the original question, it is a tough one. They are both pretty good players, and I think someone did send a listener question in terms of if we were to get rid of one of them, who would it be? But I'm going to take the shit out of Santa and say, it's like you said, just enjoy them while they're still here. It is such a Liverpool thing to do, especially when one of them goes through. Well, you can tell which one's the more beloved out of the two when both of them went on a fucking, you know, goal drought last season, Mane kind of got it in the neck and Salah was like, oh yeah, don't worry about it, it'll come good sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Interesting.
You know, for me, it is, but absolutely right. The first thing you said there is, why do we need to compare it? When Sané and Sterling were playing for City, I didn't see anyone. I'm quite ignorant to the City fans, but I didn't see anyone comparing the two. They just appreciate both of them and they were happy. I think first of all, that's what you should do with both of them. However, I'm talking about Mane and Salah. I think they really do both complement each other a lot. And I have to give a lot of props to Mane because he's improved at his time at Liverpool. He used to have just a purple patch and then he would go off and we'll have a good, have a decent game, but he'll just miss a lot of chances. And since last season, him getting a golden boot, you've really seen him like far more consistent in front of goal, which is something I've been crying out for. So I have to give him a lot of props in that sense. And I feel like he's just excelled as a player. His mentality is key. Like he just, I remember Julian said last pool he hasn't had a summer break in what, 7 years, something like
7
that.
7 years, boy. Yeah. He's proud of it.
Which is nuts. Like his mentality is like is elite. That's the kind of mentality you need if you want to be top tier.
Do you know what was sick talking about that mentality in the Southampton game? Because I don't know who watched it live. I watched it live, right? And there was a bit where it was like a drop ball situation. And the rules have changed where if it's a drop ball, you both can't fight over it. The opposition have to give the ball back to you. And Mane wanted to fight over the drop ball. And the ref is like, nah, you don't with the ref. Like, nah, I want to fight over the drop ball. Like, that's the type of mentality this guy's got. And that's what I love about him.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's proper. Yeah, he's good, man. Like, he's proper good. The thing is for me is that I don't know what it is, but this game is really key for me. It's the Napoli game last year that we needed to win for us to qualify from the group stages. And Mane just was killing me in front of goal. And it was Salah who stepped up with when he rolled Koulibaly and slotted it in. And I think for me, you know, it's Salah's obviously the media king. Like everyone loves him in the media. I love how like just ice cold he can be. Just like just goals. I think they do complement each other. I'm not gonna sit on the fence. I'm gonna say in the attack, I do prefer Mane because he just has a bit more variety in his game.
He's like, got the X factor.
Yeah, he has, exactly. He's got that X factor. Salah, sometimes I feel like he only has one shot, which I've changed my opinion on since that banger against Chelsea. I don't really see him score goals like that. He normally goes for the curler. That's his like preferred finish. And he hasn't really gone for many dinks nowadays, whereas Mane's got all kinds of finishes. We've seen his backheel goal against Watford. We've seen his bangers against Arsenal, against Southampton this weekend. Like, all these things, we've seen so many different types of finishes. So for me, he's got that X factor. It's just that Salah is that media darling. He's that marketable character that we have in our team. And I ain't going to lie, he's got the most goals scored in the Premier League season.
I don't think so, man. I just think he's... I think for me personally, I think Salah is a better player than Mane.
I think in what sense? Go on.
I just think... how would I explain this now? When Mane first came here, he was very... He's rough around the edges.
Yeah.
He played on that right-hand side. He wasn't as consistent as Salah. I think he's more of a, when he came, he was like a 1-in-3 player. He's now up to his level to like a 1-in-2. He's now refined his game. I think playing on the left has allowed him to be a bit more, I don't want to say cautious, I want to say allowed him to think more about his game, because he had to change his game because he was taken over from Coutinho. So playing on that left, which is testament to him, because Klopp trusts him on that left. And he has to do a lot more work than what Salah will have to do on the right. So when he's on that left, he has to do a bit more defensive work. He has to drop a bit deeper. But then when you look at Mane and Salah on that right-hand side, you can see who was, again, trusted a bit more to be that final jigsaw in a puzzle. Who's gonna finish off the chances? Me personally, I prefer Salah in it because he's one more creative. Again, he scores more goals. He looks to just play within the team. I think you said earlier, Harold, that he had one Mane had one assist all last season. And then if Salah's your finisher and also your creator, surely that shows you.
Exactly. And this is what I mean. He gets a bad rep, right, as a selfish player, but the stats say something completely different.
I mean, he's our most creative player. He creates the most chances and he scores the most goals. So for me personally, he's a better target. That's not taking anything away from Mane, because Mane is an absolutely fantastic player, fantastic dribbler. But we want to see more, like, because he's coming from that left-hand side, we want to see more create chances for his teammates and that. But again, I'd rather just celebrate both of them, man. I used to really argue, like, oh, no, I've never had these two kind of players in my team before, man. I'm just going to have to appreciate them.
Yeah.
They're absolutely mental.
Dude, the thing is, I'm not even mad at people saying Salah over Mane. Like, that is completely
understandable. Yeah, ones, yeah.
But for me, it's just, you know, when you've seen a player improve, you naturally just go to them a little bit more. You just say, like, you just have that bit more bond with them. You're just thinking, oh, I've been wanting you to do this, and you've finally done it. Where Salah just came in, bossed it, and it's just stayed at that level. You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
I guess I have a bit more, like, emotional stock in Mane, if you like. I've just seen him just put in some awful performances, and now to see him put in way more consistent 8 and 9s out of 10s on a weekly basis. So I think that's why... Perhaps I'm swayed towards
and
him.
You know what's funny? You've got a lot of non-Liverpool fans who are picking Mane over Salah, which I find hilarious, because when Mane first came, man, we're comparing him to, like, Martial.
Bruv, hella banter.
You know what I mean? Man, I don't know, like, fans think we forget or something. Or...
Yeah. And now they're like, oh, we've always known he's world class.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, shut up. Like, no, you never said it.
No one said it. Even when he come, when we signed him, I was a bit like, oh, all the players, why do you want Mane? Right, man. Fine. But then after a while, when he started playing, you're thinking, no, this guy's actually sick.
That was the one player that Klopp signed that I was like, you know what? I trust you, Klopp. Because when he signed him for Southampton, I was like, 30 million on Mane? Wow.
You know what it is, right? So with Mane, like, it's documented. You can check my tweets. I have backed that signing since day one. Same with Salah. But it wasn't just on their ability. It was more about the system that Klopp plays. I had a feeling, like, based on who they were, what their attributes were, and how Klopp plays, they were going to bang at least 15 goals a season. And for our two wide forwards, that's all we kind of needed at the time. But as time has gone on, you just see, like, it was a masterstroke of a signing for both of them. They both cost the same amount, and they're both easily worth 100 mil now. Like, easily.
But
so, yeah, like, in general, I think they were both two fantastic signings. Both of them got flack when they joined. Fans were not in support of, like, either signing. It was a bit 50-50 either way. I think Salah had a bit more support.
Yeah. Well, if you remember with Mane, it was between him and Goethe, wasn't it? And then Goethe chose to go back to Dortmund. So
that's that bloke, mate.
Augustus Gloop.
Boy, that guy. But yeah, like, they both have, in my opinion, they both have pros and cons, right? My issue with Mane is when he stinks up the joint, he is horrible. He will be horrible for at least a month. He will go through a stage where he is so bad, like, there is actually no point in him being on the pitch, right? But his pro over Salah is he will defensively help Robertson.
Yeah.
Whereas Salah exposes Trent so much, this is why Trent gets pammed, because there's absolutely no support on that right-hand side. But if Salah plays bad, he can still nick a goal. Mane can't do it.
But you know what, though? You know, one thing I like and I hate about Mane is that he can miss an open goal. He'll go on and what he's just done. There was one goal against City, and when we won 4-3 a couple of seasons ago, and he really should have just kept going closer and closer and then scored.
But he went, like, outside the box, he just stopped.
With his weak foot.
On his left foot.
Doing, and it hit top bins. I was like, this guy is outrageous. Like, it's just, you just cannot predict what he's gonna do.
Even last season, he went from September to January without scoring like 5 goals or something.
People forget this.
Something like that, like from September. So when people are arguing, mate, his form has been from 2019, which has been out of this world. I can't take nothing away from him. But we actually literally relied on Salah from, like, September to January.
We did still. I ain't gonna lie.
But then if you look at Salah's drought, I think Salah's drought was like
what, five, six games, something like that. It wasn't a lot. It wasn't a lot in comparison to Mane. So going back to your point, Fai, we know that if Salah was to play poorly, he can still nick a goal. Or because he's so like frightening, people are still scared of him, even if he's not playing well.
Yeah,
like people are still backtracking and he's making a lot of space. But again, can't really separate the two, man. They're just two perfect forwards.
Yeah, we're blessed to have them both. So really and truly, like, that's why I don't even engage in the debate. I just appreciate both.
That's it, man.
That's the best way to do it, guys. So yeah, cool. So Mane Salah versus Arsenal this weekend. What were you saying? Chris, you go, man. What are you saying about the Arsenal game?
It should be a good game. Actually, quite.
What are your thoughts on Arsenal? Sorry. So you've seen like 2 weeks now worth of Arsenal. Last week was against Burnley. Yeah, that finished 2-1. So what are your thoughts on the Burnley game and what you saw from Arsenal?
That was the early kickoff, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I watched about half an hour of it. I'm not going to say I wasn't impressed. They did what they needed to do. But when you look at actual kind of stats and how Burnley were actually still getting into the game when they didn't really have a right to, I mean, Arsenal conceded 18 shots to Burnley at the Emirates. So, just doing that kind of thinking, you concede 18 shots to Liverpool at Anfield, it's not going to end well for you again. And I mean, as much as I love Ashley Barnes as much as the next person.
Big man, you need to chill with this, man. Ellis, he's not allowed back on the pod, man. What is this? This Ashley Barnes loving, I'm not having it.
Mate, it's got three goals.
You need to stop, Chris.
3 goals in 2 games is all I'm going to say. But, I mean, yeah, you've got players like, I mean, Dwight McNeil, Chris Wood, Ashley Barnes. They were getting in decent positions and getting good goal-scoring positions. But, you know, you give those chances to Mane, Salah, Firmino, possibly Ox if he starts. I'm not even going to bother saying that Biscuit Keita because he's not even going to be on the bench, is he? So
Biscuit.
Shout out to you for that one. That was a fucking funny one, by the way. But, yeah, I think what he's going to do, and I know a couple of the guys on Anfield Wrap have said this, he's just going to say he's going to stick with the 4-3-3, stick with pretty much the same squad bar midfield where he's already said he's going to rotate and just go with that until the international break. And he pretty much did the same last season. But, I mean, in terms of the Arsenal game, Ceballos played well. That might be a bit of a problem against that midfield, but I think Guendouzi's in for a bit of a game against Firmino because Firmino is on top form and he looks like the Firmino from the season before.
Yeah.
And Firmino loves pamming against Arsenal.
Oh, that's stats unreal, isn't it? That he scored in...
He scores every game,
every
basically.
Game.
It's the maddest start. Maddest stat. I remember when he first played against Arsenal, he scored 2 at Anfield.
Oh,
so,
that
yeah.
absolute screamer to make it... 2-2.
Yeah. He loves it. He loves playing against Arsenal for some reason. And I think in the past 3 seasons at Anfield, he's always scored first. So, it's a mad stat.
The funniest thing with that as well is I think he scored 8 goals against Arsenal as well. And that's the one fan base in particular that likes pamming him for not being a proper striker. So
funny, isn't it? It's
funny how that works.
Let's not say anything because otherwise we'll get in trouble. Let's just discuss the preview in it. Like, so what are you saying, Harold, in terms of Arsenal? Like, what have you seen so far of them this season? How do you feel about the game?
To be honest with you, I do like the first time I actually saw him play, Ceballos.
Yeah.
Against Burnley, he looked like a decent player.
Tell me about him. Like, I didn't watch that game, so tell me, like, what was he doing? Like, is he like more of a playmaker or what?
Well, he seems it, but he also looks like a ball winner. So I'm trying to liken him to another player. I've seen some other people liken him to the likes of Cazorla, but I think that might be just because he's Spanish, so I'm not too sure. I need to see more of him, but he did look like he has quality. He has great technique in his passes, great weight on the ball. He seems like he has very high football IQ. He's very aware of what's around him. He just looks to be like. He seemed like he's a proper CM, you know, honestly. Looks like what Arsenal really needed, a little bit of creativity in the midfield. It's funny I say that because, anyway, no, sorry. Let me not begin to speak about their players. So, yeah, they He looks good. He looks good. He looks like a playmaker, but someone who can win the ball back, which is quite rare, I think. Yeah, very, very decent player. I'm a little bit worried about Aubameyang, I have to say. As much as I think the only person that's really done better than him in the time he's been here has been Mo Salah. He is a goal scorer. He is like, he can really finish. That goal against Burnley, that's, although Sabaya's got the assist, really and truly, that was all Aubameyang. I have to be honest with you. He cut in on the left and his finish was class. Like, he's a goal scorer, man. Like, that's what he does. He scores goals. He is proper good.
I don't think he should be playing on the left, though.
Yeah, yeah. Same. Yeah. I completely agree. But hey, I mean, if he's playing on the left, I don't really mind. Hopefully it nullifies him to an extent in terms of his goal scoring ability. But yeah, he just looks sharp. He just looked like he started the season quite well. I saw his highlight of his goal against Barca in the preseason. He looked like he was doing very well. He scored a winner against Newcastle. He's their on in-form player. Those are the two main players I'm looking at. I'm like, Liverpool need to keep their wits about them in that sense. I do expect us to win, let me be completely honest. But I do think Arsenal will score. I do want us. I'm really keen on a convincing performance. This is something. It's like, we're at home. We've had a week to prepare. It's under the lights. It's a 5:30 kickoff. Let's really like show the Premier League what we're all about. Let's state our claim. If we really are going to be challenging for the trophy, let's really state our claim in this match and show them like why we finished so many points above them last season. And let's keep it going.
100%, man. Chris, what are you saying in terms of Pepe? Do you think he's going to start? Like, what are your thoughts on all of that stuff?
I think he's going to bring him back off the bench.
You think?
Yeah,
I feel like Anfield's too major for him to start a first game.
I agree with that. I think he's done quite well when he's come off the bench, apart from... I don't know. I know Twitter was hyping up that kind of step over he did, but then he got dispossessed like 2 seconds after.
The one middle of the pitch.
Yeah.
Yeah, that amazing skill there. Sick.
He looks like a baller. There's a reason why he cost the amount of money that he did. He looked a good player, but it's like you said, he's been a bit more effective off the bench. And I think, especially when you sign a player kind of late in that window when he doesn't do a full preseason, they don't normally start until after that international break. So, good player. And if you're Arsenal, you're going to want to bring a player who's got, you know, good amount of skill, pace, who can kind of break the lines, and especially if we're playing that high line, hopefully get behind us about the 70-minute mark, if they think we're still knackered, which I don't think we will be. So, but just going back to kind of like how Burnley played, they had an abnormal amount of possession in Arsenal's half, and it was a bit weird. It was a game that a team with decent quality probably would have got a draw or taken away from them.
Do you feel like Arsenal let them have possession in the sense of Burnley aren't as threatening with the actual ball? Because I feel like that may have been a ploy in the sense of, I don't think Arsenal will play like that against us.
I think we do that though, to an extent sometimes.
Yeah, we let the other team have the ball.
Yeah, you saw it against Norwich. But it's a bit weird. I thought Norwich had a bit more attacking prowess than Burnley, but that's not to be expected. It's just, I think the thing for Burnley is, I think they're relying a lot on kind of Dwight McNeil and Eric Peters, who seems to have come back from the dead, to be their main creators. So you can kind of lock off that one side from where most of it's coming from.
And you know what, as well, actually, on the topic of Arsenal, I've seen they're starting, they're two youngsters. You know, now I think about it, I do actually think, I'm thinking who is better prepared to start? Like Reece Nelson or Pepe, I actually think Pepe might start.
You think?
Because I'm just trying to think, like, would they play? Would he trust a youngster? I mean, he's got Maitland-Niles playing that position. Got Reece Nelson there, and who's the other one? Willock has been playing. I'll be very surprised if he goes for all three of those. It would make sense if a senior head comes in. Pepe obviously not being there for very long. I don't know. I wouldn't be that surprised if he goes for Pepe over Reece Nelson, or maybe just bulks up the midfield so we have no way to move to progress the ball forward to our forwards. Yeah, I'll be surprised if all three of them play again. Like it was a game against Newcastle. He played all three of them. I don't know how he started against what's called Burnley, but I do know that both obviously Maitland-Niles is playing and Reece Nelson played. So I wonder
if Willock played again.
Oh, he played as well?
Yeah, he played against Brandon.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah, I will be surprised. Not going to lie, all three of them play, but hey.
So I think Maitland-Niles definitely starts because he started last season and he scored last season as well.
Yeah. That's going to be a big area for them in terms of defending, though. Because if they're going to play Rhys Nelson and Maitland-Niles on that right-hand side, and obviously you're going to be in for a bit of a pamming. I mean, kind of looking at where the where Burnley attacked mainly, that was down there. Right-hand side. So, I mean, it's a difficult one for them because obviously is Tierney still injured, I think?
Yeah, he's not coming back until later, yeah.
Yeah, he's out for a while. He's still he's still kind of integrating a new centre-back in David Luiz, but, you know, I think when you've got a centre-back like that, you can kind of plug and play him. What's the other guy, the one who's been chatting shit?
Socrates.
Oh, they're on Stick Talk. Arsenal players are on Stick Talk this week for some reason.
It's wild. It's like, I don't know why.
Why are they on it so bad? Like, they're proper, like, you know, they're not worried about us. They're not scared of us. Like, we've pammed you so many times. Why are you not scared? What's happened? I don't understand. Where's the bravery come from?
They're in the paper. They're all up in the videos, dancing. and we're just in the shadows training for another beating. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit mad. Do you guys feel like Lacazette's going to start? Because I know last season he was on the bench. Oba played up front by himself.
No, he will start. He will start, I think.
I think it's in their best interest to just start as many good players as possible.
Yeah, man.
Because you don't want to take a... I think this is their best start in, like, 7 years.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
That's
not really saying much. That's just two wins in
a row. It's not exactly. It's two.
Literally, like, they're bragging about this. It's like, yo, it's just two wins in a row.
It's like five games, I'd say. But it's in their best interest to start with their best players. You don't want to chop anyone and then just get a pam in. Then once you get a pam, you start bringing on players too late. So I think he will start. I expect Liverpool to pam them, to be fair. I was a bit nervous because of this high line and Aubameyang, but then I thought, bun them, man.
Let me not lie, a lot of it for me does depend on how we set up. It was diabolical if we tried to play like we did against Norwich, against Arsenal. Oh my word, I'll scream. If we try to do that.
This is definitely a revert back to norm performance for the back four.
Yeah.
Just drop back a little bit. Stay solid, stay tight. And that. You have to watch the runners as well, because the midfield, they don't watch runners, they're only watching their runners. So, but again,
we're going to need to watch Ceballos closely. Fab's going to need to be on Ceballos, on his case. I would be really interested to see what midfield he does go for. We go for, rather, Klopp. I'd be really interested.
What do you guys hope for in terms of our midfield?
Fab.
Yeah.
Ox.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, why do you want Ox? I'm getting a headache.
No, man. Ox is sick in the midfield. He's got good passing, good engine. He's the one that can get the ball and just drive forward with it.
Do you think his body can handle three starts in a row?
He didn't start.
Yeah, he started. Yeah, he did. But he got taken off at half time.
He was that bad. We forgot he played.
Yeah. He started at Southampton. He played most of the match.
Yeah,
starting against Chelsea, he left halfway through.
Just out of curiosity, how do you think he played against Southampton?
I think he played well.
Yeah.
I think he was tidy. I think he kept possession. He put in some good balls, like some good crosses. He fought for the ball and he was tracking back. I think that was like the perfect game for him to build up his match fitness.
Completely agree.
And get him back to pace with like Premier League football. And I think that was like the perfect game for him to do that. And I personally think he played really well. But I would not have started him against Arsenal purely because, number one, it's an emotional game for him.
Yeah.
And no matter what anyone says, that does play on a player's mind when they're playing. So I don't think he's got the temperament to handle that right now, especially when he's not actually like match fit. I would bring him off the bench.
So who you having in his replacement?
our boy Kasper, like Genie Wijnaldum's gonna have to start. So I'll go Fab, Genie, and Hendo.
Well, you know what's mad? You said Kasper, yeah, and I actually didn't know you were talking about Naby Keita or Genie Wijnaldum.
I was up in the air, man.
Can you imagine? We have two Kaspers in our team. Hey.
I mean, Naby's biscuit. That's because he's got a biscuit body. That's what you gotta know him as, man.
Man is biscuit.
Just call Naby Biscuit. And
well, the thing with Naby, even when he plays, you can see he's trying to do something. I can't see that with Genie. I don't know what Genie's doing. I don't know. I don't know if he's playing. There's been times where you're watching a game, and for 10 minutes, the commentator hasn't said his name. For 10 minutes.
Let's stay on this point for a second, because there was a listener's question about Ginny. So let's go for it. Jeff Anakin is asking, why do some Liverpool fans and rivals continue to hail Wijnaldum when 60% of matches he plays like Casper the Ghost's father and only turns up at Anfield in big games? Are they just blind or incompetent? So clearly we know how Jeff feels about it. What do you guys think?
I think it's because he's got a nice fade. He's got a lovely fade. He's got a lovely set of teeth. It looks like the part. You know what I mean?
Have you seen his Instagram feed?
Family,
he is fly.
Fire still.
But you know, like Guendouzi, when he's running up and down with his hair, it looks like he's doing something. He's not really doing nothing, but it looks like he's busy. That's the same thing with Gina. Like, it looks like he's doing something. I remember Arsenal last season when we drew 1-1. He absolutely killed Fabinho. Absolutely. Fabinho was doing so much work. Yeah, Fabinho was looking at me like, yo, my guy, you going to help me here? It's diabolical, as in, because for me, my problem with him is that he's got so much ability. You know he's got ability. You know he's got a good first touch. He's very strong. He's got good skill. He's got good temperament. But he just doesn't do nothing. I don't understand why people are saying, oh, yeah, it's a tactic from Klopp wants him. Nah, man, it goes beyond that. I'm sorry. There's been games where he's passed the ball like 17 times in central midfield. That is woeful.
You know, for me, it's like, it's so tough to... First of all, shout out Jeff, my guy. With Gini, God, he does kill me, man. Do you know what it is?
Rate him? Let me ask the first question. Do you guys all rate him? Do you rate Wijnaldum as a midfielder? Yes or no?
Newcastle, yes. Liverpool, no.
Krish, what are you saying? Yes or no?
It depends on the day, doesn't it? This is the problem.
Yes or no, Krish?
You
rate him?
Yeah, I rate him.
Ellis, what are you saying?
I rate him.
All right, cool. Harold, continue with your point. Sorry, I just wanted to clarify that first.
Fine, how about you?
I rate him. But I'm also not stupid enough to like deny how stupid he is and how shitty he is sometimes. Like, I get frustrated watching him, but I can see what he brings to the team. And on his like best days, he's brilliant. And I also see with Holland how he plays. So he plays further up at Holland and he's a completely different player. Like, attacking wise, he's a completely different player and he's so good, but that's not what his role is for us.
Okay.
And that's the issue.
Fair enough. I like that you have that insight. I don't really watch Holland too much. Okay, fair enough. I'll definitely take your point. I think for me, when it comes to Genie, is that a lot of the time he does... The part of what you're saying is you're saying like, oh, are we just blind to it? Yes, part of it is that we are just blind to it. The same way Lingard gets away with a little bit of... Like, Lingard gets away with murder sometimes. My goodness.
The thing is, we know Lingard is whack. The only thing with Lingard is he's clutch. He has clutch moments. It's a bit like Luis Garcia. He was whack with the ball. He used to waste possession all the time, but he had clutch moments.
That's it. Yeah, and I think you pay for that. Like, you pay a player for that. Like, it's really strange. Like, I guess you can liken it to Origi, who may not ever do what he did last season ever again. But because he didn't, he got a new contract. It's just one of those strange things. But I think he's just very obedient, Wijnaldum. And I think that actually has...
What a term, obedient.
Fucking hell.
He's, to be fair, he listened to what Klopp said. I think Klopp is telling him to do these things. And he just, and that's why Klopp likes him so much. And he will never ever bash him in anything he does. He doesn't really bash anyone, Klopp, to be fair. But he's like, he can tell he's a Klopp favourite. I think for me, sometimes he just, because, I don't know, I guess when you've been around for a while, you just, there's an emotional equity you build up with fans, and it's hard for them to like criticise you in a sense. Like being through some hard times to seeing us now, I think that plays into it. But if you really ask a fan who is really a backer of him, what does he do? They'll struggle to tell you. He does everything okay. Doesn't really excel in much. In a Liverpool shirt, let me specify. And then obviously when you see games like Arsenal last year and what impact he can make. And I saw glimpses of this Newcastle player who scored 5 in one game one time. I'm like, where are you? Like, I need to see more of this, especially because we're crying out for a midfielder who can score goals and have a real influence in our final third.
Yeah,
it just feels like he should be that man. But at the same time, I'm not so quick to criticise him, nor am I quick to criticise any of our players, apart from Mignolet, Lovren and Moreno, because he's just following the orders of Klopp, in short. But I do think there comes a time in your professional career where you need to be like, you know what, boss, you need to play me forward. And that's why I rate Henderson for what he did in January, mm-hmm. or whenever he plays Southampton away, and that like catalyst of a game for him. So I need him to do the same thing, basically.
Boy. Boy, oh boy, the curious case of Gini Wijnaldum, man. The curious case. Like, this, like, he's going to be one of those players where we always, like, kind of treat him like Marmite. Because we see how he can play in big games. For some reason, he plays well in big games. But put him against Burnley away, he just doesn't show up. Like,
you don't even notice he's there. It's mad.
It's crazy. You know, some footballers are like that. Some footballers are like, they thrive in big games, thrive against better players, but then when it's time to do that, I can't be bothered unless that's Gini. But then again, I think what Harold was saying, he's an intelligent footballer, so there's roles that he has to do. He has to plug gaps,
yeah.
Just defend the space, which might, like, stop him from playing the football. But still, like, it doesn't stop you from passing more than 17 times in midfield, bro. Come on, man. You know what I mean?
It's mad.
It's mad. I get it. Sometimes you want to plug the gaps, help Robertson, help Trent, just stay around, defend a bit well. But you can still demand for the ball. And that's the problem we have when we play with Henderson and Wijnaldum. They don't ask for the ball.
And the thing is, with Wijnaldum, like, one of his strengths is he can keep the ball.
Yeah,
like, he is great at shielding the ball away from opposition. Yeah. Yeah. It's just what he does with it, which that's irritates the problem. Me.
Just, even when he came in against Chelsea, and he was a ghost. Fam, there's no reason for you to be a ghost. You see what I'm saying?
What? When did he come on?
I remember getting vexed when I saw him coming on the pitch.
Fam, because you're thinking, what's he coming on to do now? He's coming on to do nothing. Ah, fam, you absolutely drive me mental.
It's hard, man. Literally, like, I know deep down that he is important to us. And like I said, I want him to play on Saturday. But if he puts in a 2 out of 10 performance, I wouldn't be surprised.
It'd be, man. These guys piss me off, man.
So, yeah, like, Gini Wijnaldum, man. What a guy.
Well, with all that being said, are you still happier with Gini playing over Ox?
For Arsenal or in general?
No, for Arsenal. Just for Arsenal.
Then. For Arsenal, yeah, I am happy with Wijnaldum. I'm happy with Wijnaldum over Ox, purely because I just don't think Ox is ready for that game. Like, that's just how I feel. And it's not about ability. It's just more about fitness and just, like, the mental side of it. I don't think he's ready for that game. I feel like he's just going to try and do too much, or he's just going to be overawed by the situation. I feel like Wijnaldum, he's calm, collected. You go on IG, you see his feed. He's loving life, chilling with shades on. Like, that's what he will be doing on the pitch. I don't know what he'll actually be doing with the ball, but in terms of his temperament, it will be there. Yeah. And we know he's match fit. So I personally would start Wijnaldum, Hendo and Fab. I know there's not a lot of creativity in that three, but I don't feel like with that Arsenal defence, you need a lot of creativity.
Yeah. Fair enough.
But yeah, again, that could come to bite me, just like the Lovren segment last week came back to bite us. So, like, again, guys, we're sorry about the Lovren stuff, innit? Like, if we jinxed it, we apologise. We got too excited.
Yeah, Julian started singing songs and shit, man.
Julian was praising God, and then...
Not today, buddy. Not on my watch, sir.
Oh, my God. All right, cool. So, continuing on with, like, the midfield conversation, let's get to, like, listeners' questions. I've got a question regarding the midfield from at Learned Brethren. He's asking.
Sorry. Just curious on the rest of the team. Obviously, our front three picked themselves, but who you have in at centre back?
Not this again. Did you see Matip against Southampton?
Yeah, he was atrocious. Yeah, I did see that.
I'm trying to stay quiet. Like, I don't want to say too much because everyone seems to think I've got some mad agenda against Matip, which I've explained over and over again. But if you saw what he was doing against Southampton, I just don't know anymore, man. Like, again, it could be because of the high line. But he was also doing some stupid shit. It was everything. Like, his passes back to the keeper. He was heading it out of play for, like, corners. Like, I don't really understand what he was on that game. Like, his positioning was off. Everything was off. But that could also be because of tiredness. Did he start in the Super Cup game?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that could be because of tiredness as well. Like, there's so many different things to think about. Again, I prefer Gomez over Matip. I want Gomez to be a number two. What happens on Saturday, I have no idea. If you're playing against Aubameyang up front, it's tough because Gomez has the pace, but Matip is better positionally. So,
a bit more mature as well.
What are you saying, Harold? What do you think?
I think it's tough, man. I'm going to say Matip.
You're going to go Matip. Krish?
What about it?
Gomez.
You're going Gomez. Ellis?
I'm going Matip.
Boy. All right, I'm going to go with Gomez then. Just make it 2-2 because there's a few things that I'm really struggling to, like, work out with our team. The centre-back pairing right now is one of them. I'm of the impression that I think Gomez should continue playing so he could bed back in. But I also don't want to lose to Arsenal or draw against Arsenal. So that's my thing right now. So, yeah, I'm not too sure. But, yeah, I personally prefer Gomez over Matip, so I would always start Gomez. So, yeah. All right, cool. Listeners' questions. Going back to the midfield. At Learned Brethren asked, what is our best midfield combo? So let's say they're all fit. Biscuit is fit. Ghost is fit. What is your best midfield combo? Is it 40? Let's say 4-3-3, not 4-2-3-1.
Okay.
Let me go first. I'm going to throw a spanner in the works, as they say. Fabinho, Ox, and one of Hendo and Gini.
Interesting.
I say that because Hendo and Gini are very, very good tactically. They understand their roles very, very well. They're very disciplined. Then it's going to be one of Ox or Keita. They'll be that there. I won't say creative outlet, but the midfielders who are better with the football, who can do something a bit more with the football. So I think it'll be one of them. I know a lot of people are going to say, I'll let you, man, say what you want to say. But for me, it's always going to be Fabinho. He's a certainty.
Top dollar. Yeah. That's the first midfielder in ages where everyone agrees certainty. He should always start.
Yeah.
You see, in life, there's like three centers, certainties, isn't it? There's Death, Paxis, and Fabinho has to start. That's just what it is. That's just the bottom line. Then the two can is either obviously between Keita and Ox and Fabinho, and also then Henderson and Gini.
Cool, Krish. What are you saying?
Well, Fabinho, obviously. And probably Hendo and Ox, mainly because I feel like they have the tactical awareness to kind of fill in for fullbacks when need be, cover the right amount of area on the pitch. Defensively, they can do well. Defensively, Henderson can do a job, and Ox isn't actually unlike Gini. He's not afraid to dribble out the ball from the midfield, take on players, and actually have a pass that can split a few defenders. So I'd go those three for me.
Cool. Harold, what are you saying?
Yeah, same as Krish. Fab, Hendo, and Ox. I've got a lot of stock in Ox because for me, when he was, before his injury, the only thing missing for me was his final ball decision making. It was literally, that was the last thing. Sometimes he would shoot in his bread to pass and vice versa. And I feel like that's really just a coaching thing. And if he can correct that, we can seriously get some goals. So I'm really interested to see how well he fares. Yeah, I've got a lot of stock in Ox.
Cool. All right. There's a question that I completely missed and it related to the last point. So I'm just going to bring it up now. What do we think is going to happen against the Arsenal? What is the scoreline going to be? Let's just put our bollocks on the line and just put a score there.
I'm going to go 3-1 Liverpool.
4-1 or 3-1?
3-1.
3-1. Okay, Krish?
3-1 Liverpool.
Harold?
Same, 3-1.
Everyone is saying 3-1. I'm saying the same thing. That was a question by Good Evening One. All right, cool. Flyboy Black is asking, oh God, this is going to be interesting after what Krish said originally. If we was offered 300 million for one of our front three, gun to your head, who are you selling first?
Salah.
So you're saying Salah. Krish, what are you saying?
Well, when I read this question earlier, I thought Salah. So I'm going to stick with that answer. Even though it's the maddest one when you think about it.
Ellis.
Yeah, man. Same, really.
You're telling me you wouldn't sell Firmino for 300 million? Sorry, yeah. Like,
would you do that?
Firmino? Wait, like, do you think he's worth 300 mil? Do you think he's not? Do you feel like we can't get a number nine to replace him?
We probably could, but I don't think we can get someone to do what he does.
No. I take it back. I thought you were saying if one of our forwards were offered for 300 mil, who would it be? That's what I took.
Oh, back. No. It's like if we were offered 300 mil, gun to your head, which one are you selling?
Firmino in a bit, bringing Mbappe. I don't care if it doesn't work.
Boy, you got to sell Firmino straight away.
Yeah.
Mbappe, welcome. What do you mean?
Now let's start that question again. I wasn't ready.
Krish, you're still sticking with Salah, yeah?
Nah, fuck that. Get me Mbappe.
like, use your common sense when you're answering these questions.
But the thing is, when you see what Firmino brings to the team, man.
This is the thing, man. When you see what he does for the team, all the shit he does, it's...
Yeah. Cool stuff, innit? But if Mbappe's next door and he's willing to come, you're going to drop Firmino to the bench, aren't you?
Oh, mate, I'll drive him to where everyone wants to go.
There you go. So, Firmino is replaceable. No matter what anyone says, I love what he does. It was obvious in the Super Cup. Like, clearly, he's that important to the way we're currently playing, but he is replaceable.
I think, you know, to be fair, I think all three of them are replaceable.
Yeah, 100%.
I think all three of them are players that we can be. Man, Mbappe does Firmino as well and Salah as well. Then you can get Ousmane Dembele. Man, there's players out there.
I mean, yeah, like, we're going into fantasy football now.
Yeah,
we're
not, I know,
saying,
yeah.
That, we're not saying that we're not going to sign Mbappe, by the way. We're just,
yeah, exactly. I don't want anyone atting us and saying, oh, you man are crazy. You think you can get... Don't shut up.
No ITK business going on here, fellas.
Yeah, we're just saying, innit?
Boy, all I'm saying is that night kit next year, there's a reason why, man. That's all I'm saying.
Say no more.
All right, cool. Next question from Gunner D. He's asking, if you could have bought any player to rotate with the front three, who would it have been?
This is a really good question, by the way.
Yeah, go on.
Any player. So are we like setting a budget
on this? Realistically.
Okay, cool. Would you say Sancho's realistic?
I mean, yeah, we could have got him for what, 100 mil?
If you
put 100 mil on the table, Dortmund would have taken it.
I'd have done that or watching how he's played in pre-season, João Felix.
Yeah,
that kid's gonna be a baller.
That guy is that. He's the one.
You know, the tech. Yeah, his tech is unbelievable.
Yeah, he's the one. He's the one for me. 100%.
Have you seen that thing in the video with him in training when he does that thing over the keeper?
It's like Rainbow. A FIFA player come to life.
Absolutely
mental. You know, back in the day on FIFA where you can like create your own player and change the attributes to 99 everything. Like this guy, like his tech is unbelievable. Like the stuff I'm seeing, the way he dribbles with the ball, takes on players, keeps the ball, like he's madness.
Yeah, he had a piece of skill at the weekend where he kind of broke the ball from midfield, took two players out of the game, and he won a penalty.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
It makes me sick that Simeone's managing him. Actually makes me sick.
It is a mad transfer window for Atletico, signing João Felix and Trippier. How strange.
It's mental. But yeah, all right, cool. So João Felix, who didn't answer? Harold, did you answer?
Yeah, I agree with Krish. João Felix for me.
Cool, João Felix. Cool stuff. Who is next? Oh, here we go. So at Keat J5, he's asking, with Emre Can being told he can leave Juve, waste man, and Coutinho leaving Barca, waste man, if they were still at the club, how do you think a midfield of Emre, Fabinho and Coutinho would have fared in the league?
Emre, Fabinho and Coutinho?
Boy, so
my word. Are you mad? I would rather have me running in quicksand back to the fence and have those three in my midfield. Are you? No, not for me, man.
All Emre right. Can, explain why.
Emre Can moves like he's treading water. Mm-hmm. He is so stiff. It drove me crazy. He did have some elements of good play to him, but nah, not for me. Coutinho obviously has that star quality, but in the way we're playing now, nah, man.
Can't hack it, man. You can't hack it.
Just no way. Just no way. There was a reason why he got subbed off fairly often. Yeah. When he was saying just no for me. So you're telling me you're gonna have a man who's walking on concrete? He's walking like he's making concrete. You're gonna have a man who gets tired after 60 minutes. And you're gonna have Fabinho holding it down for everyone. Now I'm good, man. No. I'm good.
It's interesting you say that because I was having a discussion on Twitter with someone. I was with Farouk Benjamin Kasani, and he was saying that Emre is better than Gini and Hendo.
Farouk loves Emre, innit? Like,
fair.
Like, that's his boy since day one. He's been fighting me over Emre Can since like 2015.
I wasn't aware of that. I was saying like they're all the same players, but Gini and Hendo champion because they understand what they have to do and they do it better. Like there'll be times we're watching Emre, and this guy is dopey. Doesn't look over his shoulder.
It's not even dope. Like, he's got the attributes to be great, right? 100%. He's just lazy. He does not clock on sometimes. He's brain dead sometimes. That's his issue.
Brain dead.
No, I agree. I feel like he could potentially be the like on the level of like Michael Ballack, but he's just not switched on enough. He can't be. Not in my opinion anyway.
Yeah,
I can't be that slow, man. I'm sorry, it really pissed me off.
Yeah, his movement, you know, like when they 1-2 him, like it's mad. Like he does not know how to recover.
Oh my word, man!
It's mad.
And the thing is, he was a dilemma for Klopp because Klopp didn't know whether to put him in an 8 or to put him in a 6. You put him in a 6, his tactical discipline was a bit lackluster. You put him in an 8, he can't move, so you're stuck. What do you do?
Yeah, man.
It's crazy, man.
Yeah, I'm just glad he's rotting, to be honest. So like, I'm a bitter person. I'm quite petty, innit? Like that waste man thought he was going to do better than us. He went to Juve, played about 15 games. Cool, you won the title, but we won the Champions League, innit? So
you're not alone. I mean, and the thing what he held the club to ransom the way waste.
Obviously,
it's not as bad as Coutinho leaving, but just the way he was like, he was moving, bro. Just signed a contract. Where else are you going to go? You're going to Juventus. Fine, cool. Oh, you have to leave now.
He couldn't kick out Khedira off the like starting lineup.
Khedira, have you seen Khedira play, bro?
Boy,
Khedira plays like he's 50 now.
Boy, like it's, all I'm saying is the lights are on Emre Can, isn't it?
Emre Can.
Yeah, boy. All right, cool. Next question from friend of the pod, Rob Mush. He is asking. Well, he's saying Klopp said a big reason for our first half was due to a lack of plan. Let me say that again. So Klopp said a big reason for our first half lack of plan was because we had, quote, barely any time to analyse Southampton. Does that mean we have no natural playing style and players are too dependent on planning? And how much time will we really have to analyse in a packed schedule? Chris, you can go first.
Oh, come to me first with the most complicated question.
Good question.
It's a really good question. Shout out to Mush. I think one of the things Klopp is really big on is having the standardised plan and obviously the little game plans for the bigger games. But I think he likes to have them solve their own problems on the pitch, which is why playing midfield in the Jurgen Klopp system is probably one of the hardest jobs in football. In just regards to all the tactic stuff. Not too sure about the actual lack of a game plan thing, because I always think you can usually tell from the first 10 minutes of a game that there's a plan, there's a set plan about how we move the ball or if we're targeting specific areas. But we're in what, of this specific team, we're in what, year three now? So there's always going to be little tweaks and changes, and they're probably just kind of ironing those out. As I think I've said this in the chat a few times as well, that it feels like Southampton was the end of our kind of extended pre-season, just because the fixtures have been so hectic. And we're still ironing a few things out, obviously, with some of the guys coming back late. And if we are implementing a new style, they have to kind of learn that in a shorter period of time as well. So I do. It's a good point, but I think, you know, I think there's always a plan there, but there isn't a plan B either. So.
Cool, Harold. What are you saying? What do you think about like the way we go about certain games?
I think it is, first of all, a really good question from Mush. We had Julian answer a little bit of the question in the chat. I do agree with him to an extent. Last year we saw Klopp blame the wind, albeit it was very windy. We saw Klopp blame the wind to the amusement of our rival fans. I do think sometimes, for some strange reason, he does play as if woe is me. And I don't know, I'm not too sure why that is. It's like, I mean, this is going back to what we said in the first pod, and just go out and spend, that kind of thing. Like, I mean, we could recover some of this. Like, anyway, let me not digress. But effectively, I do think... it's a tough question to decipher, but I think, don't get me wrong, of course you have to analyse a team beforehand, but they should come, we should have a certain type of player who is just, as we did, which is what actually happened, Mane just stepped up and was like, you know what, hit the game with a scruff of the neck and I'm going to like put my footprint on it. So it's going to be games like that. You're not going to have a lot of time to prepare. He said it's rock and roll football when he first came. That's literally what the Premier League is, rock and roll. Only now this season we're getting a Christmas break when everyone else has had it for God knows how long. So it's going to be games like this. So we just need to have star quality to where even where we haven't prepared for them, our quality is just going to excel above without having to find their weakness. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
I think that is a large... Having that star quality, and which we are blessed for in Virgil van Dijk and our forwards, it is great to have, but I think sometimes he just needs to remember that he can rely on it, because he can be so meticulous in his preparations, especially with his assistant coach Pep, I've seen some videos then, I've seen how much of attention to detail they'll have. Sometimes you won't be able to, like, you just don't have enough time to do so. You just need to rest on your laurels effectively, and then your star players to turn up.
Yeah, like Ellis, what do you think? Do you feel the same in terms of what Harold's saying, or do you feel as if it's just like the woe is me attitude is something that Klopp needs to kind of stop?
I think Liverpool always has a plan. I think Klopp always has a plan. I don't think he goes into any matches being ill prepared. If he has enough time to get the information across to the players, maybe not, but I think they always have a way of playing. I read an article about how they didn't have a lot of time to get all the things, but they analysed videos of the way Southampton played, and they always have a play. The woe is me thing, you know, sometimes things don't go well for you. Sometimes the taxes are off and you just need something to deflect from the players. Sometimes the players are, obviously we've all Klopp never ever blames the players. He never comes out and says, oh, he played this, he done that. I think he's just like, if he's looking to blame the wind, it's because he doesn't want to put any pressure on the players.
I'm just laughing at the wind stuff. I can't believe that was.
It's mad, isn't it? That's my impression.
It's almost as if it was only us playing with the wind and other
teams. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
The other team weren't affected.
Yeah, it's mad.
I think that sometimes you probably get a few tactical things wrong, so he needs something else to like deflect from the fact that one of the players has played shit. Just say the players play shit, but he doesn't want him just because of the way he is as a manager. But in regards of planning for the game, I think he always has a plan. The issue was, did he have enough time to relay the message to the players, which we saw in the first half.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't really it wasn't as fluid as we wanted it to be. Then
I also think it's a bit of an anomaly, by the way, like in the sense of having a Wednesday game finish so late and then travelling as well. And
it's not going to happen again.
And also having a game at Saturday 3 p.m. That's not going to happen. Like usually our games will be on Sunday.
Yeah.
If we play on Wednesday, so it's a bit of an anomaly. I don't feel like we need to worry about it too much.
No. But shout out to like UEFA and the FA for not helping us. Respect for that, man.
I mean, it doesn't matter, man. We won the cup and then we won. Liverpool are your Super Cup champions, guys.
Just back on the woe is me point as well. There's a certain bald manager that moans more than anyone.
The one that likes to mention us for no reason.
Yeah, the one who likes to be a bit of a chatty patty and drop names in when he shouldn't.
Bam, why did he talk about Adrian? What the hell?
You know, it was such a sassy comment as well.
Oh, Adrian, shut up, bro. What's that? I don't understand. We are living rent free. We got our feet up in his head right now. And I absolutely love it.
It's crazy. He's proper rattled by us. Chris, what were we going to say?
I was saying, like, I think it's normal for most managers to complain. And I think the win point is one of the funniest fucking points, though, whenever he moans about the win. Because I always laugh, especially when you've chose to move a training ground to Kirby, which is notorious for its fucking wins. So
He's just preparing, isn't it?
Yeah,
sorry, man, that's what he's doing.
He's giving them black ops training in the wind.
Oh, man.
Boy. All right, cool. So we've actually got so many questions, but we can't go through them all today. So what I'm going to do is wrap it up, and then next week we can continue with the questions. But thank you, everyone, for sending in all those questions. We do appreciate it, and we will read them out. So that's it. Krish, thank you very much. Harold, thank you for coming on. Ellis, you as well. Catch you same time next week. And also make sure to add us, Cop and Fracker, use the hashtag Touchline Fracker, and yeah, peace.
Peace.
Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool's King to the Cop are champions of Europe once again.
This holiday season, you know what I have on my wish list? Adventure. That's why I got a new Honda during the Happy Honda Days sales event. They have a whole lineup of rugged, all-wheel drive SUVs, CR-V, Pilot, Passport. But at the end of the day, I drove off in a new HR-V with a bunch of safety features. And best of all, I got it on clearance. So don't just sit around knitting an ugly holiday sweater. See your local Honda dealer for Happy Honda Days clearance pricing today.
Sports Social Podcast Network.